Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Before we're done today, we're going to have a lot of fun at the expense of the Auburn Tigers. Admittedly, I have not been the world's best fan when it comes to the basketball team this year. I haven't exactly turned my back on them. I've just sort of forgotten they were on a couple of times. Last night was sort of one of those where I was kind of busy doing some other things, and thankfully there's like 8,000 Georgia reporters that tweet every dribble of the basketball game, so that kind of reminds you that they're on. So I flipped over there and saw the ESPN2 broadcast last night of the Georgia win against Auburn, and yeah, we'll have some fun at the expense of the Deep South's oldest, I guess in this case, basketball rivalry before we're done here today. So that's going to be a really good time. Tony Barnhart also coming up today, too. So it's a fun and busy show for us. Really glad to have you with us. And let me begin with this. I'm interested in recruiting, and I'm not just interested in, like, who ends up at Georgia and kind of the end result of all of this kind of stuff. I'm sort of interested in the process of how it happens. I think there's a strategy that coaches have to employ with how they pursue recruits. I think there are trends that impact the way that classes come together. And I think that, you know, Georgia in some cases impacts those trends. In some cases, those trends impact UGA. But obviously, given the great recruiting success that Georgia has enjoyed in recent years, whatever like the major storylines are in recruiting, Georgia's going to be smack dab in the middle of all of that. With that in mind, the other day, and I have played you this audio before, but I want to play it again as a way of setting up where we want to go today. Kirby Smart was kind of asked, hey, in a class like the 2020 class where you signed so many guys of out of state, where does in-state recruiting kind of factor into everything that you're doing? How does that factor into your plans? And in the midst of this quote, and it's a little longer, but in the midst of this quote, Smart says something that sometimes a lot of coaches might not be quite so interested in admitting. And he was pretty forthright and honest about all of this. So let me let you hear Kirby Smart on the heels of the conclusion of the 2020 class, kind of talking about the ratio and the balance between guys from outside the state and guys that Georgia picked up from inside the state. Here is Kirby Smart.
Number one, we had more interest from out-of-state kids. So we had some national interest from players that came to camp and really performed well that in the past we might have lost out on. It might have been second or third on a national kid that was a really good player, say a Darnell, say a Kendall, say a Keeley. But we won a lot of those. The other part is we lost some in-state battles that were really, really good players. And so I think the two of those merged to just kind of happen at unique positions. Where, hey, we'd have taken the in-state guy or we'd have taken the out-of-state guy. It just so happened we got the out-of-state guy. But we're excited for those players. And, you know, there's been a lot of good out-of-state players play here at the University of Georgia. There's no limitation to your borders. But we certainly respect and understand how good our state is and what the high school coaches do.
There's something that Smart says in that clip that, if you really think about it, you don't hear coaches say an awful lot. Smart says, we tried to get some in-state players, and they just sort of chose to go elsewhere. I mean, for a long time, especially back in the kind of the past, when a coach stood up at the podium on National Signing Day to discuss the class that he brought in, it was kind of a cliche to always hear these coaches say, we signed everybody we wanted to get. This is exactly the perfect class that we wanted, no matter what the recruiting ratings say. These are the 25 or however many players. These are the 25 players that are the absolute perfect best for us. Smart says, no, in some cases, we did pursue guys in-state, and we just missed them. You can think about Miles Murphy. You can think about a Rick Gilbert. You can think about some others that Georgia kind of went after those guys, and they just sort of chose to go elsewhere. And then conversely to that, Smart says, also, we've kind of seen this thing in recent years where our national brand is bigger than it's been before. All of a sudden, people around the country know a little bit more about Georgia, and suddenly we've got this sort of like massive interest from out-of-state kids that maybe we didn't used to have like prior to Georgia traveling to play Notre Dame in 2017 and winning the Rose Bowl and kind of all these other big national stages that Georgia has been on recently. All of a sudden there's a lot more of that, and now we're getting more interest from out-of-state kids when it comes to recruiting. Smart does a pretty good job of laying all of that out, and the reason why I mention that to you now is because it's kind of interesting to see how Georgia fits into a larger trend on all of this. You've heard us before talk about and talk to Bud Elliott, now with 24/7 Sports. Bud was a guest on our show a couple of weeks ago. He covers Florida State amongst some national stuff, and we talked to him then about Trey McKitty and kind of his feelings on Zach Evans and a whole bunch of stuff. That was like, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. He was here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp. Well, Bud, at his new job now at 24/7 Sports, has recently written an article kind of highlighting a trend of of just how many five-star recruits as of late have been signing somewhere else other than their home state. And one big caveat to all of this is Bud counts IMG Academy, which is in Bradenton, Florida. He counts the players on those teams as being from the state they were born in, most of those guys not from Florida. So that's one important thing to know about this. If you're watching a video, I'll show you this chart, and if you're listening, I'll try to read this to you. So over the course of like the last 20 cycles, you've still got more five-star guys than not who end up signing to play inside their home state. But look at how these numbers have dropped over the course of the recent years. This is Bud Elliott, 24/7 Sports. I'll put a link to this article. It's really good work from a guy who I think does a pretty good job of covering the recruiting industry. So according to Bud, from 2001 to 2004, 62% of five-star players chose to stay in their home state to play college football. By the time we got to 2005 to 2008, it was 51%. So we've dropped a little bit there going from there. Then you have a little bit of a consistency that kind of ranges. 09 to 12, it's 53%. 13 to 16, it's 53%. But watch this. From 2017 through 2020, just 34% of five-star players have chosen to stay in-state to play their college football. Now, Bud does a pretty good job of highlighting some of the reasons why. One of those is the way that the official visit schedule has been changed. You can take spring official visits now, which means that you can kind of go see other programs outside your region and have that visit be paid for earlier in the process, which allows you to make maybe more of a deliberate decision than you could have made in the past. That's probably true. There's also the practical reality of the Texas schools haven't been quite as good as of late. You've had five-star players leaving that state. Look at what's going on in the California schools right now where, I mean, I think you heard this even from Kendall Milton the other day that, you know, there's just a different brand of football being played in the South right now. So Stanford, UCLA, USC, some of these programs out West that have typically recruited well, they're not recruiting as well anymore, especially the two LA schools. They're not recruiting well at all right now. Five-star guys like Kendall Milton, who's essentially a five-star prospect, they're leaving that state to go play elsewhere, to say nothing of Florida. And gosh knows, of all these trends, we've probably done about as well as anything of highlighting the Florida trend on this. The fact that with the Gators having been down, Miami and Florida State kind of having been down, you've got players leaving the Sunshine State there as well. So all of a sudden, you know, you've got Florida kids, Texas kids, California kids, they're leaving to go play elsewhere. Georgia's certainly reaping the benefits of that, but it's not just those players in those states who are kind of doing some different things. As Kirby Smart said, you know, we tried to get in on a Rick Gilbert, or, you know, and maybe at one point in time, Georgia thought they were going to, you know, win that recruiting battle. We tried to win with like a Miles Murphy, or you can kind of substitute your own name on this. But in some cases, some of these guys now just want to go play different places. They just want to be outside of their own state. So when you think about what Georgia's going to do for this upcoming recruiting cycle, obviously, you know, you think about the opportunity to kind of get in with a guy like Tony Grimes, who I think was on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger yesterday. That's apparently easier to do now than it used to be. Easier to get a guy like that to leave the state of Virginia and come to a place like Georgia. James Williams from down there in Opelika, Florida, you know, easier to get him to leave that state. He just named Georgia as one of his top three the other day, along with Alabama and Clemson. One way or another, James Williams will be let it be known that he's leaving the state of Florida to go play his high school football. So it's easier to get those guys maybe than it used to be, and Georgia certainly made it look easy with a few of these guys. But for guys like Brock Vandegrift, who Georgia did win the commitment of, but for a long time was slated to go out to Oklahoma and be a part of that high-powered offense with Lincoln Riley, you know, guys like Amarius Mims and others, maybe it's a little harder to win those recruiting battles than it once was, because in this modern age where we exist in now, where, you know, social media and the internet maybe has kind of, I don't know, made the world a smaller place or something, all of a sudden these five-star guys are a little bit more willing to kind of dream about maybe being somewhere else other than their home state for playing college football. So what do you do with all this? How do you process all of this? I think one of the big things for me on this is it's just another reminder of why things like what we talked about yesterday are really important. In a day and age in which five-star prospects can go anywhere, and more of them than ever before are willing to try somewhere else other than their home state, the Keely Ringos, and you can just fill in the blanks with all these, you know, five-star guys from all over the world that seemingly Georgia has been in contact with and ultimately end up signing. It's important to stay on that national stage. It's important to have that reminder to them that Georgia's the place to be. So when you're playing at Clemson in 2021, when you're, you know, even going to Tuscaloosa this year, even though that's an SEC game, it's still that big profile stage. What Notre Dame was a year ago, Kirby Smart has credited that for a lot of the five-star players that Georgia's won. It's important to stay relevant. It's more than just winning. It's also playing in big games and big spotlights. And when you do, you're going to get a chance to get more your fair share of five-star guys. I don't a lot more than ever before coming from out of state. Georgia may be benefiting from this more than any other. It's a fun time to be a UGA fan for that, but I guess it's also kind of made the in-state recruiting maybe a little bit more challenging. The good news is for UGA, they've got a coach in Kirby Smart who seems to be pretty good at navigating these waters. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Meriwether and Tharp, and glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. By the way, the YouTube has just been sailing smoothly as of late. That's always really good news. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Fun guest for us coming up, as I said before. It'll be Tony Barnhart before that. Let me remind you once again that Meriwether and Tharp brings all of this to you, and we love our friends there. And obviously, sometimes for many of you, you've had to connect with them during a challenging time in your life. I understand that. Divorce, not the kind of thing that most people think they're going to be going through. It wasn't a part of your picture and your plan. But if you find yourself dealing with that and concerned about your family's future, your own financial future, about how your children are going to be kind of impacted by all of this, my friends at Meriwether and Tharp can help you. You've got questions. They've been through this thousands of times before. They can take that knowledge, what they know how to do, and put that to work for you. Your concerns can be alleviated. Your life can kind of be put back on track. But you've got to have an advocate on your side. That's why I want you to trust my friends at Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. The website, once again, theatlantadivorceteam.com. That'll get you in touch with our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. All right, we're going to get Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football. You see him on the SEC Network. You've read him, you know, your entire life, and he's going to be with us today, talk some college football here coming up in just a moment. Before that, I want to go around the doghouse, and I'll give a shout-out here to my buddy Mike Griffith, who yesterday was a part of the very interesting conference call with ESPN NFL draft analyst Mel Kiper. Now, we're going to do a little bit over this on the course of the next couple of days. You've already read some from Mike on this. You're going to read more at the pages of DogNation.com. But for today, I want to highlight something in particular. A pretty interesting evaluation of Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm, now former Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm. That is still a difficult thing for me to say and kind of get used to, but it is for now former Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm. A very interesting evaluation of Kiper about Fromm and kind of the high-end projection for what Jake might be at the NFL level, but also the reality that he's got something to prove here as we kind of go through this pre-draft process. This is very interesting, I think totally candid on the part of Kiper about Fromm, and if you're curious about where he might land in the NFL, I'll let Mel Kiper talk to you a little bit more right now.
Be on display there. He's going to have to show that is the necessary arm strength. That's going to determine, is he Eric Murray? Is he Andy Dalton? That's what I think everybody's trying to figure out. You hear Eric, well, he's like, maybe he's more like Aaron Murray. Well, maybe he's more like Andy Dalton. Okay? So if he's Andy Dalton, you're talking about second round, early second round type quarterback. If Aaron Murray, you're talking about a later round quarterback. He's not playing in the XFL. So again, you know, it's where people are going to have to make that decision based on arm strength. We know he has the smarts. We know he has the leadership. We know he's an accurate passer. Forget the number. He lost all his receivers one to this year. So you know he can do all that. But is the arm good enough?
Let's go ahead and pull out of that. For some reason, that recorded a little bit weird. That's not the way that it sounded this morning. But what you basically get there from Kiper is the issue with the arm strength. And on the high end, you can be a guy like Andy Dalton. And by the way, if someone like Jake Fromm goes on to have an Andy Dalton-type career, that's a huge compliment. That's a guy that's been a long time starter in this league, and even if his time is done in Cincinnati, he's still going to have a home somewhere in this league, it would seem. To make a comparison between Fromm and Dalton would be a huge compliment. Obviously, the Aaron Murray part of this, and listen, Murray was a great college quarterback, but that's a guy that did not really find that home in the NFL. So that's kind of what you see for Fromm right now, needing to prove, whether it be, you know, NFL Combine or Pro Days, things like that, needing to prove that you've got the arm strength commensurate with being an NFL quarterback. Obviously, the you know, as Kiper said, and you may not have heard this because, like I said, the audio was a little wonky on that. Obviously, the the intangibles are there, right? The intelligence and kind of everything else. That's all there and all a part of this. But does Fromm have what you got to have, that requisite arm strength to be a quarterback in the NFL? I'm obviously rooting for him, and not just because he's a UGA guy, but because you want to have examples of players that worked their way into a position like this. Fromm's always been a tireless worker. He's always been really committed for that. That's the example you want to set up for your kids, right? Because you want athletics to be something more than just what you're born with. Just what, you know, God gifted you with. You want it to be sometimes about hard work and stick-to-itiveness or whatever that is. You want that example to be out there as well. Certainly Fromm has a chance to kind of be an example of that, so we'll be rooting for him during the pre-draft process here. That's Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. For now, I want to get back to the subject of the current dogs on the field for 2020. And by the way, the big one coming up in 2021 as well, a guy that knows a whole lot about the history of Georgia versus Clemson and no doubt will be curious about Charlotte in 2021. Let's talk to Tony Barnhart right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Yeah, sure, why not? We'll give Tony a little DogNation insider status for today. We'll make him an honorary member of that. And, of course, it's always great to have him on the program. Really fun insight every time we get a chance to speak to him. Tony, welcome back to our program here today, and hope you're having a nice winter. I know you kind of live in this Georgia area where I do, and you've probably been having to brave some pretty rough weather here over the last few days, it would seem.
Well, we could just finally get the rain to stop, Brandon. I'd be good for that right now. Wow. Crazy.
No, I know that. So I think one of the reasons I want to have you on the program today is because with Georgia and Clemson being announced to come back and play again in 2021, that's a part of what I guess a series of six upcoming games. To me, it kind of feels like we're about to get into a trend again where Georgia-Clemson feels a little bit like a rivalry again. That's before you have the potential of these two teams playing in the college football playoff, which obviously is certainly a strong possibility just given kind of where both the teams kind of rank in preseasons each and every year. And Tony, I came of age during the 80s. I know that's a decade that you know well also. And back then, when I was growing up going to Sanford Stadium, for the teams that came into Athens, Georgia fans hated Clemson as much as they hated anybody. I mean, this was a real rivalry, two teams that played each and every year. And when you think about them getting back together again in 2021, I guess how much do you think about the past in this series and what Georgia and Clemson used to mean and the possibility of what it could mean again?
Well, two periods of time come to mind when this came up, Brandon. One was 80, 81, 82, or 83, when they played each other every year. In 1980, of course, they win the game and win the national championship. 1981, they go to Clemson. Georgia goes to Clemson and turns it over, I think, eight times, and Clemson wins that game and goes on to win the national championship. And then they open the 1982 season under the lights at Sanford Stadium. That's one period of time. The other period of time was 86 and 87, if I'm getting I think I'm getting those years right. A kicker by the name of David Treadwell from Clemson kicks field goals at the buzzer 2 years in a row to beat Georgia. And one of my AJC colleagues at the time, Ed Hinton, a great, great writer, wrote of the second one of the game, he said, "Death, thy name is Treadwell," and I will never forget that. So yeah, the 80 miles apart, great tradition, and I'm just tickled that they're going to play so many times. And I think it's six times is like a 13-year stretch. It's great for college football.
Yeah, and I think that the two schools kind of need the games for different reasons. You know, Clemson probably needs this much the same way it needed the Texas A&M game and some of these other games it's probably played for that sort of schedule validation. I think, Tony, for Georgia, it's a very different thing. We talk about recruiting on this show a lot. Georgia and Clemson are going head-to-head with recruits all the time, and to be frank, Clemson's got a pretty good recruiting brand out there right now. Dabo Swinney's kind of carved out a niche for himself that makes him a little different kind of coach than maybe what Kirby is, and certainly a little bit different kind of coach than what Nick Saban is. And when you're going to have to battle that brand in recruiting, and Dabo's won his fair share of these recruiting battles, you can cite these examples. You might as well play him on the field and try to take him down a peg on the field if you're going to have to battle him in recruiting every single time.
That's right. And there's a bunch going on here, Brandon, in scheduling. The recruiting factor, that's certainly a factor. The other factor is I maintain that Georgia's trip to Notre Dame in 2017 changed a lot for a lot of schools. That woke a lot of schools up, and they are hearing from their season ticket holders, hey, we don't want just good games at home. We want experiences. We want something new. And when 40,000 Georgia people went to South Bend, all these other athletic directors woke up and said, you know, we need to do something like that. So I think that is a factor. And the other factor in this is that moving forward, I think everybody, particularly in the SEC, the elite teams in the SEC, are going to have 10 Power 5 games. 8 in the ACC, 2 outside your conference. Because when we go to an 18 playoff and it's going to happen, you're going to need to if you want to get in with 2 losses, you will have to have played at least 10 Power 5 games.
No, I think that's a very interesting trend the sport could be heading towards. Let me talk about what's going to happen here in 2020 for a moment. Obviously, we don't really know a lot about what to expect from Georgia. New quarterback, new offensive coordinator. I guess, Tony, the only thing I'll say about this is if you had to have a year to kind of bring in a transfer quarterback that you're certainly optimistic about, but still at the same time not quite sure what to expect from, in the SEC this year, this may be a pretty good year to do that, because when Georgia and Alabama play in September, I think both teams will have some questions about their quarterback. You know, LSU, after winning the national championship, they don't really know what they have in Miles Brennan right now. Even, you know, places like Tennessee are still also a little bit, I think, unsure about what the quarterback position is going to look like. So it is interesting that Georgia, uncertain at quarterback, actually fits in pretty well with the rest of the SEC conversation this season, does it not?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a lot of questions won't get answered until we get kind of deep in the season. And the thing about Georgia is that I get asked all the time, well, how is Georgia going to do? I said, we don't know. And anybody who tells you they know or they're lying to you, because we don't know how the combination of Jamie Newman and Todd Monken is going to work out. You know, the track record says it's going to be pretty good. But Jamie Newman has not seen the closest thing he's seen to an SEC defense, Clemson. And so we don't know until now. His skill set would tell you that it would work, but you don't know until you get on the field.
So along those lines, I guess I'm of the belief that Georgia will be better in 2020 if Kirby does loosen the reins a little bit over what I've assumed to be his influence over the offense, and that Todd Monken, who I do think was a really good hire for Georgia, I think that Georgia will be better if there's a little more of Todd Monken's influence and a little less of Kirby Smart's. I guess let me ask you a two-part question. Do you agree with that premise that Georgia needs a little bit of outside offensive influence? And if so, do you think Kirby Smart's kind of ready and willing now to sort of loosen up and allow that change to occur?
Yes and yes. They definitely need – look, I can still remember sitting in Nick Saban's office 4 or 5 years ago and asking him, okay, what's next? Because Saban's always a step ahead of the trends and what other people are doing. So I said, what's next? He said, we got to start scoring more points. I went, really? Yeah. And so not long after that, he went and hired Lane Kiffin, a step I never thought he would make. Same thing with Ed Orgeron. You know, Ed Orgeron won 10 games 2 years ago and radically changed his offense. Why? Because he wasn't going to win a championship unless he did. And so I think Kirby Smart has gotten to that point where I've got to, as good as my defense has been and will be, I've got to loosen up the reins and I've got to go out and hire the people who can do that for me.
Let me finish up on this point, because you make the comparison to Nick Saban. You know, when Saban goes to LSU, he wins very quickly. When he goes to Alabama, wins very quickly. Urban Meyer at Florida and Ohio State, winning very quickly at both those spots. And I guess I was kind of always under the belief that Smart needed to do the same thing at Georgia. And by win, I mean winning national championships. That's what those guys did. However, when you look a little deeper at the resumes, you realize that Meyer had been a head coach for a while before he got to Florida. Saban obviously had been a coach for a while before he got to LSU. This is Smart moving into year 5, but only his 5th year as a head coach, not just his 5th year here at this spot. How do you evaluate what you've seen from Smart thus far, what he's learned? You know, I'm assuming what he still needs to learn maybe in terms of some of the offensive stuff we just talked about here, but this is still a young coach, kind of, you know, growing up before our eyes here, you know, as a head coach. I guess how would you make that evaluation of him and the way that maybe he has matured as a coach as he gets ready to begin his 5th season?
I think he's gotten better every single year. I mean, every team is different. But to me, you simply look at the numbers. He's been a head coach for 4 years. 3 of those years, he's advanced to to the SEC championship game. He's won it once. He's gone to the playoff once. He's came within one play of winning the national championship. That's a lot. That's a lot to get into, really, the last 3 years. So everybody talks about, well, he's got to win a national championship. No, what he's got to do is keep Georgia in the mix, keep them in position on a consistent basis to win the national championship. And if you do that, you're going to win it. It's all about consistency. I mean, everybody's so ready to win a national championship. If you play consistently and are consistently in a position to win your conference, it's going to happen.
No, I think that's exactly right. Tony, it is always a great pleasure to get a chance to talk to you here on our program, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. We know you've got some great written stuff out there, and, of course, you're making an appearance on the SEC Network all the time. How can we find more about you and kind of what you have going on?
Well, I'm in business with three of my old newspaper guys at TMG, the media guides, TMGCollegeSports.com, which is part of the Maven Group, which owns Sports Illustrated. And we got college football and stuff there every day. So just go to TMGSports.com.
Tony, thanks for being a part of the program. We really appreciate that. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
All right, Brandon. Take care.
Good stuff there from Tony Barnhart. And I think what he says about Kirby is absolutely right. I think that, for the most part, all sports are kind of sort of a ratio business, college football maybe more so, but you just got to give yourself chances to win, right? You know, be a preseason, like we talked yesterday or so about the new way too early top 25 from ESPN, Georgia's number 4. If you really are like one of the 4 or 5 teams in the preseason to begin a season, then you have a chance to win it all. And if you do that enough years, at some point in time, the math is just sort of likely to be on your side. And yes, you know, when you get that big shot in the big game, you got to take advantage of your opportunity. And I kind of get all of that. But this really is a long-range deal here. This is not about one season, and if you don't get that, then the window closes, or if you don't take advantage of this opportunity, then you're never going to get that opportunity again. That's kind of a scarcity mindset that, frankly, doesn't really do anyone any good. You know, I think that Georgia is in this thing for the long haul, and obviously the byproduct of a lot of that kind of stuff is the patience that's required when you have to sit through some of the disappointing losses that have occurred. And yet, ultimately, I don't think it's like a meaningless platitude to say that Georgia's going to be hanging around here for a long time. When you're recruiting at the level that Kirby Smart is, you're going to give yourself a lot of chances. There's one more thing I want to say about what Tony just said there. Let me, before that, remind you that we are now in a brand new era of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. A really, really fun show last night. Tony Grimes, part of the program. Tate Ratledge was part of the program last night. So that's 2 weeks in a row that a big-time UGA signee has made an appearance there on Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. So if you're not getting that, make sure you check that out. New time, 6 p.m. Jeff doing a great job. By moving it to later, it gives a few more of you a chance to watch it live, and it gives a chance to interact with more of the recruits, the signees, the upcoming 2021 guys, and everything else. So it's a great new format, a great new show. It's all presented to you by our friends at Kroger. And by the way, Kroger Chef Jr. on the way for March, and a really delicious item this time around, dumpling sandwiches. That's March 7th and March 21st. When you sign up for Kroger Chef Jr., you get a patch, a recipe card, an apron, a chef hat, a recipe box, and a dumpling maker. So that's all really good. KrogerChefJr.com is the website to go to, and you can register for your class today. It's the 7th and the 21st this month at participating locations, and the item, once again, is those dumpling sandwiches. That sounds really good. So Tony, talking about David Treadwell, it brings up the former Clemson kicker. It brings up such a vivid memory for me. And I think that, you know, depending on when you grew up, you just sort of have a different perspective on Georgia football. I just turned 43 in February. So the David Treadwell era and those sort of heartbreaking losses to Clemson in 86 and 87, that's really my era. And unfortunately, kind of in that sort of twilight of the Dooley years, Coach Dooley stopped coaching in 1988. There were a lot of those games where Georgia was sort of close but no cigar, almost getting over the hump and just not quite getting there. And the Clemson losses were very, very prominent in my memory when it comes to stuff like that. You know, I'm not old enough quite to really remember Herschel in 80 and 81 and 82 when Georgia was winning those games against Clemson and, frankly, beating about everybody else there as well. I don't have as many vivid memories of that. My memory is more of that kind of era, sort of post-Herschel and kind of post-83 Cotton Bowl, when when, you know, Georgia was not quite the same caliber of team. And I think that does give you just a sort of a different perspective on all of this. In some ways, it may even be a better perspective because, like, you know, when I first kind of got very, very diehard about all of this, when I first got very plugged into Georgia football, I knew what heartbreaking losses felt like. I knew what disappointment felt like. So when Georgia finally won the SEC for the first time really in my lifetime in 2002, I think I had a good appreciation for it. And when Georgia, you know, made the college football playoff in 2017, I think I had kind of a good appreciation for it. I mean, I still remain very optimistic that at some point in time, Georgia's going to have quite a lot of celebrating to do because of its own championships and everything else. And the stories we will have endured over the course of those years will only go a long way towards making us more appreciative and more, I guess, happy and making the experience more enjoyable when it finally does go down there. So maybe a thought to keep in mind here is that it's all part of the backstory. It's all part of the history. And as Georgia kind of plays these big games in the future and gets a lot of these big wins, there could be a lot for all of us to celebrate with all that in mind.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
It's always really fun to have Tony Barnhart a part of our program. Really good stuff. As I said before, you can find him at TMG College Sports, see him on the SEC Network and kind of everything else. Tony just does a great job, and it's great to have him as a part of our program. Let me go cruise around the SEC for now. It's brought to you by our friends at Royal Caribbean. And boy, one of the things that I love about Royal Caribbean are just the various ships they have in the fleet. One of those is the Oasis of the Seas. Beautiful amplification that's just taking place here for the Oasis of the Seas, adding a lot of really cool stuff, whether it be Ultimate Abyss. This is like a dry slide that goes like, like 10 decks all the way down to the bottom. It's an unbelievable, just fun thing to have at sea. Playmaker Sports Bar and Arcade, a sports bar. We here at Dog Nation Daily really love that. You've also got Music Hall, which is kind of like a you know, you have like cover bands and things like that play there. It's that sort of live music venue as a part of the ship. You got Lime and Coconut, three stories tall. This is kind of a tropical themed bar. You got Bionic Bar with the robotic arms that kind of make and serve the drink. So it's really fun stuff. You can contact your travel advisor to get your own vacation planned, or you want somebody to help you kind of figure all this out and make the best choice for you. Contact my friends at the Cruise and Vacation Authority if you need to know more. You can call them 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971, and get in touch with the Cruise and Vacation Authority. All right, cruise around the SEC courtesy of Royal Caribbean, and this has been widely reported, kind of, I guess, validating the online chatter that's been out there, is that Zach Evans, we knew, this is on the basis of, we had Trey Wallace on the show from Knoxville a couple of weeks ago, and he said at the time that Evans was going to take another official visit somewhere in March. That's when the new official visit calendar kind of recycled. And we now know that's going to be to Florida. Sometime in March, I guess late March is the thought here, Evans is taking his official visit to Florida. What does that mean? I think the chatter as of late has been that Tennessee, Ole Miss, schools like that might still be the favorite, more so than Florida. But obviously the Gators trying to get involved here. This is clearly what new Florida assistant Tim Brewster was referencing the other day when he treated the H-Town Gators or whatever. Obviously a reference to Zach Evans on that. How seriously do you take this? I mean, ultimately, what you say about Evans' connection to Florida is the same thing that we have kind of all said about Evans' connection to Georgia. There's really no way to know from one moment to the next what Evans is about to do and how real or how serious really, you know, kind of, you know, any of this is. His actions are quite unpredictable. How involved is Florida going to be late in this process? I think it's very difficult to know. My rooting interest on this is, if he's not going to go to Georgia, and I'm not going to change my tune on this, I think that Evans deserves a chance to play college football based on what I feel like I know about him. I would not have kept him out of UGA, but obviously, you know, Smart has made what seems to be a different decision on that. But beyond that, if he's not going to be at Georgia, I don't want him to be at Florida, and I don't want him to be at Tennessee. I don't want him to be at one of these schools where he's going to have to play Georgia each every year. And that's not because I know for a fact that Evan's going to be a great back. I don't know if anybody from the 2020 class is going to be as great as the, you know, hype around them suggests they're going to be, Evans included here. But all things being equal, it would just be a lot more convenient not to have to play against Zach Evans. So for now, it appears the official visit to Florida is coming up next month. There are more rumblings out there that Steve Sarkisian, the Alabama offensive coordinator, could be in play to become Colorado head coach. This is a guy that spent a lot of time out west, right? He was quarterback at BYU. He was offensive coordinator initially at USC, became Washington head coach. Then he became USC head coach and fell on some hard times there, had some personal issues. Was the Falcons offensive coordinator for a while before kind of cycling back here for a second go around at Alabama. So late in the process, looks like Sark is potentially in play for Colorado. I have no idea if he's the favorite or not, but the online chatter on this is not slowing down. So we could see Alabama in a little bit of a sticky situation if it's looking to replace an offensive coordinator. Probably worth following this Colorado coaching job to kind of see how all that plays out. I saw an interesting note come out of Columbia, South Carolina, where Dacreon Joyner, who's always been a pretty popular player around that South Carolina program because he's a real legitimate athlete, but he has been a quarterback, and it seems like for now Ryan Helinski's got that starting job sewn up. There are other, you know, young guys kind of waiting in the wings here, including the recruit they just brought in, Doty, and the kid from Colorado State. But this is what seemed to be Helinski's job for right now, and maybe the odd man out at the quarterback spot is going to be Dacreon Joyner. And he has now moved, according to the South Carolina website, to wide receiver full-time. I think it's a pretty interesting move for a program that we know, you know, Muschamp team's typically pretty good defensively, trying to figure out some things offensively. Mike Bobo maybe kind of drawing up some plays. Joyner as a receiver full-time there in that spot, he may have some athleticism to make something happen. I actually probably like this move for the Gamecocks just a bit. And then one final deal here. I guess the Death Valley there in Baton Rouge is getting new turf, and so LSU spring game is going to be played at Southern. So not going to be played in Baton Rouge. LSU not playing its spring game on campus. I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, G-Day is still a really popular event, but generally speaking, I don't think that spring games are as popular as they used to be. There are a lot of schools that don't get big attendance for their spring games. LSU probably does pretty fine for its. Most of the SEC teams do, but spring games in general are not as popular as they once were. Georgia would never need a gimmick like this because, you know, Sanford Stadium's packed. But I almost wonder if, like, spring games on the move the same way. Remember, NFL teams used to play preseason games other places before there was a Jaguars. The Falcons played a spring game in Jacksonville, or they go play one in Greenville or something like that. You almost wonder if that might be a fun marketing thing for some teams to get involved with, playing their spring game elsewhere than their home stadium. Georgia wouldn't need that because folks seem to like coming to Athens for that. But other schools, they might benefit from that. We'll make that cruiser on the SEC, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And before I kind of celebrate a big win for Georgia against Auburn, let me also remind you that Dog Nation Daily is going to be out and about next Friday. We'd love to have you come out and join us for the Atlanta International Auto Show. Now, the event itself takes place at the Georgia World Congress Center Building C from February 26th through March 1st. It's the 38th annual Atlanta International Auto Show. Of course, we're going to be there Friday. That's February 28th. We'll do our show there live and then be there for you when the doors open at noon. So please come by, see us. Of course, if you've never been to the auto show before, latest new cars, SUVs, trucks, more than two dozen manufacturers are represented. You've also got Cousin Eddie's RV. It's going to be on hand. Exotic cars from Caffeine and Octane, a whole bunch more as well. Tickets for adults, just $12. Kids 6 through 12 are $6, and 5 and under, kids are free. You got discounts if you're a hero or a senior. You can go to GoAutoShow.com for more details. That's GoAutoShow.com to find out more about that. So big win last night for Georgia against Auburn in basketball. This was a fun one to be able to see. And if you're an Auburn fan, I guess just more disappointment here, because I think Auburn is legitimately a pretty good team again with a fairly new crop of players after being the Final Four a year ago. They've only lost four times all year, but one of those is to Georgia and one of those is to Alabama, right? So it's like you want to have some bragging rights about having a good basketball team, but the two fan bases you'd love to brag against, you've actually lost head-to-head games now to Georgia, now to Alabama. It's a tough time to be an Auburn fan in the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Georgia's been pretty dominant here in football as of late, and now adding a basketball head-to-head win there as well. Last night was also a much, much better performance from Georgia from the standpoint of better defensively. I'll get into more on that in a moment. But it was also, I think, and this is important, the Georgia fan support this year has been great. You know, I'm watching these games on TV. I'm not making it to Athens to see them, but you know the ticket situation has been sold out. You've seen the line of students trying to get in. There's been great support for the team this year, despite the fact that it has not been a very good season. So to give those fans a gift last night of a great win, I just thought that was a great thing to be able to see, and credit to Georgia coach Tom Crean, who after the game thanked the fans for the support they've shown all season and what they were able to provide last night.
To have a crowd like that tonight, when we're going through this process of struggling and losing close games and trying to build this program. To have a crowd like this tonight was the win is awesome. And there's no question about that. And I'm happy for everybody that we got it. But to have a crowd like that on a night like this shows that we're building the program and people are getting it. And I can't thank the fans enough. The students, the fans, everybody that becomes a part of it, they were tremendous all night long. They were loud at crucial times. They carried us through. And that stuff matters in such a big way when you're building something. And this is my third time, and I absolutely have no doubt whatsoever what's number one when you're building something is you've got to have that kind of support. And we had some high-level recruits in the building. That always helps. But most importantly, to have that kind of support and for them to stick with us means a lot to me.
I think that's a good thing for Crean to say, because I do think the fans have been amazing all year long. And last night, the Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards, was amazing. We've seen him be great offensively. Last night, he brought it on the other end of the floor. And after the game, Crean also gave him some credit as well.
Anthony showed at times at the end of the game just what he is capable of defensively. And when he spreads out and plays and he's locked into being an individual defender, he is high, high level. That's why we think that down the line for him, he could be an elite, elite defender at the next level.
So I think that's probably true. I think that Edwards does have that kind of thing in his future, and you know, certainly potentially. I mean, he's going to be a very high pick in the NBA draft, assuming he leads into the season. There's no reason to do anything other than assume that for now. But the other thing that comes to mind for me watching this game last night is, all of a sudden, Ant-Man seems like a little tougher out in the SEC tournament when you're playing this way. And that, listen, all we want is nights like last night, where the team kind of matters, the storyline kind of gets some attention, the games are worth watching, and the entertainment value is there. I mean, I think that when you watch Ant-Man do what he did last night, big three-point shot, kind of put the game on ice, a little bit of a defensive effort to help preserve this victory. All of a sudden, kind of thinking about what he might be able to look like in an upcoming SEC tournament, that's at least worth thinking about there. By the way, here's something else worth thinking about. Georgia having success against one of its rivals, Auburn. How about the Gator Hater Updater? 1,209 days, that's how long since Florida has beaten Georgia. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.